Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger. I used to host the Art of Charm podcast, but now it's time for something new. The Jordan Harbinger Show. Did you know you can be entertained and actually get a boost in your life at the same time? On this show, we dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers and top talents. Then we deliver them to you right into your ears. But I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint so you can live what you listen. After 1,000 interviews, learning 5 languages, and getting arrested in a country that doesn't even exist anymore, I'm now more ready than ever to introduce you to the Jordan Harbinger Show. Listen free to The Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Welcome to the best show in the universe. That is Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus in parts unknown. Where are you, Mark?
I just arrived in the Big Apple, the city, looking out the window at Italy as we speak, and the weather's not too good here.
What do you reckon you travel a year? Have you ever calculated that?
I probably 100,000 miles, if I had to guess, but who knows. You know, one of the great things about this stage of my career, you will find this, Adam, in about 7 years, is when you become an empty nester, you can do whatever the hell you want. You know, Paulette's been in Paris for, it seems like a month. She's got her own, you know, those, like the Gertrude Stein days, she operates her own salon over there and has people coming and going. I go from case to case to case. That's all I've been doing for the last 2 weeks. So it's, I love it.
There's also a thing, and you know you're busy when this thing happens, which is the 5 hours in the air or the 3 hours in the air are actual solitude. It's your chance to watch a movie, catch up on some stuff, take a nap, or what have you. Like, I'm so busy on the ground now that I actually kind of look forward to this. And, you know, they say the Wi-Fi doesn't work, and I go, good. I'm going to watch whatever Tom Cruise was in the theater 2 months ago, and I'm going to catch up on it now. So
I can get more done in a 5 hour coast-to-coast flight than I could in my office in 5 days.
Just not even close. What are you working on, and what can you talk about?
Well, we're going to trial in about 6 weeks here in New York, suing the L'Oreal on behalf of a class of clients who put out a product that kind of burned the scalp.
I remember that.
Yeah, and then we've got...
Is it African-American clients, and that was like a hair relaxer thing?
Exactly. And it ends up burning the scalp, and they end up bald. I mean, it's awful. It's absolutely awful. That goes to trial in April, and I've got a trial in Sacramento before that. I'm knee-deep in the discovery process with Kaepernick, so I'm running back and forth on that. And then I've got an assortment of other things that are kind of under the radar. I'm at an absolutely fascinating case in Rhode Island where my client owns a vineyard, and the city that it's in is called Little Compton. If you can believe that. Little Compton, unlike our Compton, is about ground zero for the most WASP area in the world. I mean, it's 10 generations of WASPs. Most of them don't work and have inherited money. And they're torturing, or some of them, there's a gang of six who are torturing my poor client. And yesterday we ended up getting, awarded an entertainment license. You know, God forbid that she spend money, use a vineyard, do the things that you have to do to get it functioning, employ people, and show people a good time during the summer on a Thursday evening or a Sunday, having a jazz concert or something else. And people there was like 20 neighbors who were up in arms, getting in the way of hundreds, if not thousands, of people who actually like to attend. I always get such a kick out of it. It's like, really? This is what you've got? And then you listen to these people talk and their complaints, and their complaints are always stuff like, oh, there's ambient noise, or, you know, it's, or I couldn't put my kid to bed until 9 o'clock, and I said, it's during the summer. The concerts are during the summer. What kid's going to bed for on a school night during the summer?
It's something that confuses me as an adult. It really, it's perplexing to me. Like, there's a couple things. When I lived on Woodley in the same neighborhood I'm at now, there was a family behind me, and they were, you know, Von Trapps, except for they rocked. Like, they put on concerts in their backyard, and they did it probably once or twice a month. Somebody was a musician, somebody liked to rock, and they would just be behind us, and they'd go till midnight, 1 o'clock on a Saturday, and our bedroom was in the back, and that just meant I had to put in the foam earplugs and make sure the window was shut.
You mean you didn't call the Crescenta Valley Sheriffs to come over? I mean, it's just...
Never. I've never called the cops in my life on anyone. My feeling is that is your business. What you're doing over there is your business. And occasionally, your business is going to bleed over into my business. And if it's once a month, and if as long as you guys are having a good time, and there's 60 of you, and there's one of me, and as long as you're not cooking up meth, then go ahead. Enjoy.
Yeah, I don't even mind if you're cooking up meth as long as you've got a protective screen around you and you're going to blow yourself up. But, you know, you're speaking of Woodley. Do you know at the end of that block, right by Berkshire, were you there when this guy put a baseball field in the side lot that he bought? That drove the people of La Cañada crazy. He put a miniature baseball field right on the street, and he had some lights. And his kid would, you know, take batting practice, and they'd have games, and the neighborhood just went crazy.
I know I sound like regurgitating a bird that I swallowed earlier, but I had no idea. I grew up in North Hollywood. We had the Truex family lived on one side, and the Gravitches lived off the on the other side of us. And we didn't do any building or additions or any, we didn't even hug. We were that that unphysical. But all it was is, hey, Dorothy and Eddie and Sue are, they're having a cookout. Go over there. Or Max Truex wants to hang out or whatever it was. There was no anything. So I didn't know there was this whole thing with your neighbors, that there was so much acrimony, or that you literally couldn't do things without asking permission or whatever it was. And I had
It's astonishing. We did a, like, maybe once or twice a year, a friend of mine will have a wedding, or their kids will have a wedding, and I'll offer to do it at the house. And I usually say, let's do it on a Sunday afternoon. And we'll start, we'll do it at 3. And inevitably, by 7:30, people are calling the cops. 7:30 on a Sunday. I mean, you're calling the cops. And then the cops come and say, I say, who called? Just tell me who called. We can't. It's an informant.
I know. I had this thing, and this is what here. So here's where we're at. Gary, get Chris Maxipata to get on the microphone. Is he here? He split. Okay. Then I'll have to speak for him. I have a neighbor who currently lives across the street from me, and the other day when I walked out my front door, I saw her and her female friend sort of struggling with a mattress that they were taking out of the back of a station wagon or something, trying to get it up their front steps, you know.
Right.
And formally, I would have helped them do that, except for this woman's crazy. And every time someone, and if my nanny parks her car on that side of the street, she follows her into my house yelling, move your car, even though it's just parked on a, not in front of her driveway, not in front of her walkway, just on her side of the street. When the building inspector was over my house, when I was doing my kitchen remod, when he would try to walk back to her truck, she would follow him out to truck yelling, they park their cars. And he would go, they can park wherever they want because it's a public street and they're not blocking anything. And when Chris when Chris Laxamana went with me to go do a practice day at the Long Beach Grand Prix, the deal was, you got to get to my house at 7 in the morning, then we'll jump into my car and we'll go to Long Beach, and then we won't be home till tonight, till after practice. I was getting phone calls from my guys who are at my house working that there were notes being put on Loxamana's Prius that was just parked on the street, not in front of a walkway, not in front of a driveway, just on the street. She has parking. She wasn't throwing a party or anything. Got a note, pulled it off. I said to Rob, you know, okay, well, we'll be back and he'll move the car when we get back. He got a second note. And then when we rolled up at 9:30 at night, his plan, he didn't drive with me. He drove with somebody else. He got home at 9:30 at night. His plan was to jump out of his car that dropped him off as fast as he can, jump into his car as fast as he can, and take off. She was waiting for him and confronted him.
Wow.
Now,
can you describe this person? Age?
Mid-60s, let's say. So
okay.
What that leads to with me is if I see you two struggling with a mattress, guess who's not helping?
Right.
I don't know why, because I'm able-bodied and I have a garage filled with tools, but somehow this is the road you wanted to go down, and I've had it everywhere I've lived all the time. When I lived in Beechwood Canyon, they wanted to extend like a little piece of roadway out front of the supermarket or something. That was a huge deal. They were coming at me, wanted to get me on this side, their side. I was the only one who said, hey, I work. I'm busy. I'm not home. I don't care. Do what you want
right,
with the curb.
Exactly.
What?
I've never understood it. They get so pushed out of shape. But hold on. You know what? Speaking of pushed out of shape, Tommy John.
Oh, I'm wearing them now.
No time like the present to upgrade your old, uncomfortable underwear to Tommy John. Look, you know, you were asking how many miles a year I travel. 100,000 miles a year. I don't go anywhere without my Tommy Johns. Mind-blowing comfort. They never ride up. The waistband never rolls down. No more picking wedgies or rearranging the goods. Undershirts, I'm a huge fan of their undershirts. I've said it before. I think they've got the best undershirts that have ever been made. I mean, they fit right. They're long enough. They've got the ones that are buttoned in the front. They've also got the others. Socks that never fall down. The second skin tees, so soft you won't believe it. And all of them are backed by, guess what?
Best pair you'll ever wear. It's free guarantee.
Exactly. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. Right, Gary?
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam and get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
So, Mark, yes. All right. So everyone's insane, and I have no idea. And I am slightly more shocked than when I heard about 9/11. When I hear about neighbors calling cops, calling marshals, calling, you know, home inspectors and stuff on their own neighbors, because yeah. Guess what? You're my neighbor. Now I don't like you, and I shall not help you.
Right. And God forbid somebody, you know, breaks into your house. I'm not going to go over there and intervene. I mean, it's just crazy.
I literally, Mark Gargas, as I must have told you, I had a guy in the Hollywood Hills that was so insane and then called Department of Building and Safety on me multiple times, and that he actually checked unsanitary living conditions, and they had hearings downtown. He scheduled hearings for the hedge. And I said to him, there's no reason to ever call the Department of Building and Safety or to schedule hearings. If you would like the hedge lowered or adjusted or modified, my gardener comes once a week. You're home all day. I'm out, but you're home. Kindly tap my gardener on the shoulder and tell him what you would like to do with these hedges. And that got another hearing. Now, thank God, our city's such a pile of shit that I see a summons for a hearing, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not going. I'm going to work. And that was 9 years ago or 13 years ago. Like, who cares? We have too many laws and too many regulations and not enough cops or pencil pushers. So if you get a ticket in Los Angeles, whatever, parking, just don't pay it. I wouldn't bother anymore. It's not even worth it. So they're having hearings downtown that they wanted me to attend. I screamed from the mountaintops, Mark, if this fucker's house caught on fire, I would not call the fire department. And
right.
Sure enough,
I just watch it burn.
That happened.
No way.
I was sitting. You have to picture this. Now, you really have to picture this. I was sitting in I had a big house that I put a lot of money into, and it had a big gate and a hedge and everything. And if I stood by the living room window and stood by the plate glass window, I could look and see part of his house, like the roof of his house. A very small property, oddly shaped, just almost an outhouse this guy lived in. And by the way, he had one of the windows that faced my property was boarded up. Like he had a piece of plywood where the window should have been. But he was calling Department of Building Safety and he was checking unsanitary living conditions. And I was living in a palace. So right. I was sitting in my bedroom. The kids were probably a year or two old. They're upstairs. Lynette was upstairs watching her TV. I was doing morning radio, so it was like 10:30 at night. I was starting having my glass of wine, getting ready to go to bed. And I was sitting in my den far away from this guy's house watching TV, and I was hearing like pop, crackle. I was hearing like a weird disturbance sound from the outside, but it didn't sound like someone was breaking in. It didn't sound like a car or backfire. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And I walked to the front of my house, and I walked the living room, and I looked through the plate glass window, and all I saw was a plume of fire where his house was, and the sound. You don't know how loud a fire is, like cracks and pops, and it makes a lot of noise. And I stood there, and I was holding my glass of wine, and I was wearing my bathrobe, and I was like, that old shit's house is on fire, I thought to myself. And then I thought to myself, huh, I guess I should call the fire department. And then I went, wait a minute. I made a promise to myself out loud that if this fuck's house caught on fire, I hated this guy so much. And I got into a confrontation with him before in the driveway and stuff like I literally just said, look, what do you want? What do you want me to do? What do you want to do here? And he started screaming at me. So I thought, huh, I made a pledge not to call the fire department. This guy's house is on fire. And now his house is on fire. And nobody knows but me and my atheist overlord. And I'm not going to say anything. So I stood there thinking, well,
did you have a moral dilemma? Or did you just say, you know, there is a thing called karma.
Mm-hmm. You know, the thing about me that I think everyone needs to know about me is, I am nice and I'm fair and I'm fine, and I will give you five chances to reciprocate that neighbor thing or that fair-minded thing or whatever. And then on the sixth time, you're dead. You're dead. And at that point, I do not care if your daughter is raped by a pack of crows. At that point, once you get to that point with me, I don't have
they're dead to you.
I don't have like, well, go easy on the guy. No, the guy's an old shit. He was riding me and calling the building department and all that kind of stuff. I asked him nicely a few times or whatever. He never did it. And he was an old man. It made it easier. And I just assumed, all right, I made a pledge to do nothing. So I stood there and I was watching this ball of flame coming from where his house was. And I looked at it, and I was still a little stopped in my tracks. Like, I had a lot of thoughts coursing through my mind. Like, did I scream this onto the radio? How many times did I yell this onto the radio? Like, what's the liability here? And
were you more worried that maybe you'd be falsely accused of arson? That maybe they'd think you had started it?
I had every thought running through my head simultaneously. And it was at that moment, my phone rang, and it wasn't someone's calling me, it's someone's ringing the gate.
Oh.
And the gate rang, and I picked up the phone, and somebody yelled, your neighbor's house is on fire, call the fire department, and they hung up. And now I stood there really screwed, because now it's on record.
Right.
I didn't know there'd be a scenario where someone would call me and tell me to call the fire department. I thought I was just going to get my glass of wine and go back into the den and pretend I'd never seen anything. But now somebody had seen it and someone had summoned me walking their dog at like 10:30 at night. Who evidently didn't have a cell phone or something. I don't know what they were doing.
They're ringing the gate to have you call?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. So I stood there stunned again. Now, there's somebody standing.
You're on the horns of a moral dilemma.
Yes, then there's someone standing at my gate waiting for me to call the fire department. And I'm holding the phone because I just picked it up. And now I've shifted into, I wonder what this old dick's address is. Because I know mine. What's his? Two less than mine? Is it more than mine? What direction are these addresses going? Is it one less, two less, odd, even? Like, I'm sitting there thinking about it, and I'm also thinking about who's standing by my gate right now. And then a fire truck pulls up, and I think, oh, all right, well, my work is done here. And I'm glad that I kept my oath with my pagan god that I would never call the fire department if this fucker's house was on fire. And the next day, as it turned out, he had a dead palm tree that was right in front of his house. It's like 6 feet in front of his house. A very small land and very small, no front yard or anything. Just a huge dead palm tree. And, of course, he didn't take care of his property like I did. So there it sat. And it was ablaze. And a dead palm tree goes up like a Roman candle. Like it snaps, it pops, it cracks, and it just huge ball of flame. And from where I was standing, it just looked like his house was on fire. It was just the palm tree in front. And then like 2 days, 2 years, maybe about a year later, he died. And I thought, oh, great. Now he's dead. And that was my relationship. So he'll be missed. But sadly, he had to die of consumption and not in a blaze.
Well, there, like I say, there's the, if you think you can tempt the fates by being just a 14-carat asshole, it almost always comes back to haunt you. I've just seen it too many times. I can think of, there was one particular guy who was a co-counsel of mine on a case in which we had sued the an insurance company that had not paid off policies that were issued during the Armenian Genocide. I won't bore you with it, but once we had, in all of those cases, there generally was kind of about 40% of the funds never got claimed because those families from the genocide were wiped out.
Right.
So we figured we'll just, you know, give that money to charity. And so we give the monies, or each of the lawyers designated the money for charity, and one of the lawyers designates a bunch of things or places I've never heard of. And so I do a little investigation. It turns out not only were they places I'd never heard of, but the accounts were his own accounts. So he was basically pretending to give it to charity, but then it would just go into his account.
Sure.
And he was doing all kinds of other stuff. And, you know, so long story short, the State Bar finally gets involved. I mean, I tried to tell the guy that this was going to happen. He just didn't. He had hubris. And, you know, he threw his poor wife under the bus in front of the State Bar, and after about a year, she gets disbarred, and literally, he lived long enough, and he died the week after she got disbarred 2 months ago. It was like, if there is a Lord, it's one or two ways. I mean, this is the difference between who's a believer and who's not. If you believe in religion, you think, oh, God kept him alive to watch his wife get disbarred after he had thrown her under the bus. But if you're a secular, if you're Adam, you think, no, he hung on long enough and then just gave up the fight after he had seen his wife get disbarred and he just couldn't do it any longer.
Well, you know, it's an interesting wiring that Dennis Prager asks on occasion. By the way, this Tuesday, Phoenix Grand Canyon University, me and Prager up on stage. But he says, are you the kind of person that wants good rewarded or evil punished if you have just A or B? And I'm much more, I would much rather have evil punished.
Yeah,
I love it when evil gets punished. And by the way, if it's death, it's death. I don't care. That's a decision you make.
If you're evil, you should be punished. I mean, I'm a big believer in that as well. I mean, and that's only if you have to choose. I mean, obviously, everybody would like good rewarded, but, you know, you'd like to. I think you get good rewarded when you punish evil.
I think that
has a much better incentive, if you will, or it's got a better bright line. It keeps people on the right side of what they should be doing.
Well,
speaking of the right side of what they should be doing, did you see what happened today?
No.
Which we had predicted a week and a half ago. Gates finally pled in the Russia investigation and has agreed to testify against Manafort. As we speak, he entered a plea, I think, in a D.C. court, Washington, D.C. courtroom.
Yes.
And
Gary says yes.
What interesting things, huh?
So what ends up happening with us is somehow I am sequestered from information because I'm in this studio all day, and something always drops the day we get on the phone or get on the mics together. And last time, it was the 13 Russian indictment, whatever, that came down. I'm always watching the news and looking forward to talking to you because if you watch Tucker Carlson, he says nothing to see here. And if you watch Rachel Maddow, she says, pull up a chair. There's a ton to see here. And I think, well, I'm going to ask Mark Garagus because he doesn't have a network and he doesn't have an allegiance. He just has reality on his side. So,
this is the interesting part. Normally, we had talked about this, whether it was last week or the week before, and I had said it looked like the rumor was he was going to plead. Then he didn't. And he had hired a guy, Tom Green, who I think I had mentioned, is the lawyer who worked out the Denny Hastert plea on the sexual abuse case. And Tom is known for working out favorable plea bargains in the federal system. So when he hired him and there was a filing from the lawyers that he had before he hired Tom Green, that suggested to me that there was tension because the lawyers he had were doing a motion to withdraw, and they were filing under seal, and then you hire Tom Green, so it looks like these lawyers were saying, we're not going to cooperate with, and we can't go forth representing Gates anymore because he's cooperating and he's pulled out of, if there was a joint defense agreement, he's pulled out of that, meaning if he was cooperating with Manafort's lawyers. The interesting thing for a law geek like me is that yesterday or the day before, Mueller filed the superseding indictment, which is they were indicted once before, and then prosecutors, generally when they indict you the first time, hold back, federal prosecutors especially, hold back. They don't throw everything in because they want to give you some kind of incentive to cooperate. So then the rumor was that he was negotiating a plea agreement. My guess is from outside in looking in is that he had second thoughts. And mind you, this guy was a guy who still owes his career to Manafort. He was an intern for Manafort and then later worked his way up to be a partner. So I'm sure there was, I mean, having dealt with this thousands of times over, I'm sure it was very traumatic for Gates to have to turn on somebody who he owed his career to and who he viewed as a mentor. So Mueller upped the ante and then indicted him on 32 or some odd counts that basically threw in everything but the kitchen sink and basically as well probably increase the exposure exponentially. I haven't even looked at the sentencing guidelines, but my guess under the guidelines is that you're looking at the rest of either Manafort or Gates' natural life. And so he made the decision at this point. He wasn't going to go through this anymore. He's going to roll. He's going to cooperate against Manafort, which means now Manafort has got to make, he's got to make an incredibly hard decision. And I've been there. In fact, one of my favorite lines is Ben Brofman, who Tenney works for, and he was, I won't mention the case, but he had set up the case in such a way about 5 years ago that his client, who was the target of the whole investigation, had been indicted. The number two guy had kind of held steady, and they had pretty much destroyed most of the government's case. And then at the last minute, the government made a deal with the number two guy who flipped on Ben's guy. And Ben called me up and he was just distraught. And he says, I painted a goddamn Picasso and this guy just pissed on it. And that's the way you feel when you're the lawyer. I mean, you expect that everybody's going to hang together rather than hang separately. But oftentimes it doesn't happen. It's an incredibly difficult decision. Gates has got, I think he's got four kids, young kids, still at home. You know, he's got to think about that. He's probably ringing up legal fees at $200,000 a month or something like that for a guy who, even though he was funneling millions, if you believe the indictment, it's still a daunting thing to have the federal government trained on you, coming at you, and then having to turn on your mentor.
Well, let's break this down piece by piece. So the first thing was there were 13 Russians who were accused of meddling in the election, and then it turns out that this was happening while Obama's Obama was in office, and then there were some rumblings that some of this might get back to Obama or Hillary or something like that.
Right.
And then it also turned out their meddling seemed sort of ham-handed or something. They were putting together rallies that people didn't necessarily show up to and sort of focusing in states that weren't that pivotal, wasting time in California and stuff like that. What else do you know?
Can you imagine? Well, they're never going to tell you that. That's the subject of cross-examination. If they ever get any of these guys into the U.S. and there's actually a trial, that would be exactly the kind of stuff that would be the subject of cross. You'd say, okay, here's the government's theory that they were trying to interfere with the election. Well, if they're interfering with the election, what difference does California make?
How much does this affect Obama's legacy, if at all? He gets brought up a little, and unfortunately, there's, you know, some footage of him, A, telling sort of Mitt Romney's an idiot for focusing on the Russians and how it's all about ISIS. And, I think he said the 1980s called and they want their foreign policy back or something like that.
Exactly. I mean, isn't that just delicious?
That's wonderful. Delicious? Wonderful. And then the other thing is poor Mitt Romney. And then the other part of it is he's on the lawn of the White House saying it's not riggable, it's not tamperable, it's you cannot mess with our elections, and I suggest Trump should stop whining about it and get to work, because you can't, you know, beat Hillary. And if Hillary loses, Hillary should shake his hand and have the peaceful change of power in our government. That's the way we work, but it can't be done, so stop bringing it up.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's the part that's so disconcerting about all of this. I mean, you've now got, which I've said before, I get I'm tickled pink by it. You've got the right wing trashing the FBI. You've got the Democrats defending the FBI. This seismic shift from 20 years ago. And for 35 years, I've been, you know, railing against the feds and when the feds do these particular things. And now all of a sudden people understand that, look, no matter what you want to do, this lionizing of law and order to the exclusion of any rationality it hits both sides equally. So, but, you know, we've reached a partisan kind of divide where people don't want to think rationally about it. They don't want to step back. They don't want to say, well, wait a second, maybe there is a point here. Maybe I could listen or discuss this rationally. It's just none of that. None of that makes any sense. None of it clings. So my feeling in terms of a prediction is Gates rolling on Manafort is devastating to Manafort, because Gates was there. And then Gates also, presumably, now this is what's interesting, part of what, in order for him to do a plea deal and to get, and he did get, based on what I saw today, just within the last 90 minutes, he got quite a bit of consideration from the superseding indictment. So he was able to plead to lesser counts and cap his exposure. He obviously, and this is what they do, based on the old TV show, and Adam, you and I remember Queen for a Day, he has gone in, and I would expect that he would have gone in once, twice, maybe even three times, and downloaded the prosecutors as to what he would say if called to testify and what he knows. And they would probe that. They would tell him what they know. He's under a kind of a confidentiality agreement with the prosecutors not to discuss that with anyone. They obviously, from looking at the plea agreement, they obviously think that the information he's got can be corroborated and is valuable. And it's valuable for Manafort, and it would not surprise me if it's also valuable for to get them inside of the White House. How far inside of the White House, I don't know. But that's what prosecutors do. And people can say this or that, but this is, you're watching exactly what happens in federal prosecutions. Whether it's a special counsel, whether it's a United States attorney, this is exactly how they work.
So I'll make a statement, then I'll tease something, and I'll tell you about Beachbody On Demand. Is this a fair statement that if anyone who runs a business and has multiple employees and multiple offices and so on and so forth, if the federal government got together and said, and the IRS and the ATF and everyone else, and they said, we really want to focus on Mark Garagus or Adam Carolla or whomever who has multiple locations and multiple employees and runs a business and so on and so forth. And we just want to drill down and we're going to turn over everything and find out if there's a penny he owes the IRS or if there's a statute he's broke or there's something he's Lynette is driving a Tesla. That's a company car under so says he, although she doesn't use it to drive to the company. She rides with him. She uses it to go to school. That doesn't seem, and pick up the kids at school. That doesn't seem like business. Is it fair to say that if given that power and that scrutiny, that they couldn't find something on every medium-sized business in the United States or individual?
And I'll pause while you talk about Beach Body.
You shall. And the tease, two teases. I hear this Uranium One thing pop up every once in a while, and that seems to have some legs. I want to know what that's going to turn out to be. But first, Beachbody On Demand, online fitness streaming service, unlimited access to a variety of effective world-class workouts personalized to your needs, plus nutritional content, convenient, accessible. Use your computer, use your web-enabled TV. That's probably the best thing to work out in front of. Tablet,
right.
Smartphone.
In front of the big screen.
In front of the big screen, or if you're on the road, you can use, like Mark is, you can use your tablet or your iPhone. Smartphone, whatever you like. Any web-enabled device, no need to go to the gym. Annual subscription is much cheaper than any gym membership. Programs for any level of fitness, cardio, weight training, yoga, low impact, even dance. Over 600 different workouts. You want to try it all for free? Well, good. Right now, our listeners, get a free trial membership.
For free?
Free trial membership when you text the word DOUBT to 303030. That's DOUBT 303030. That's full access, all the workouts and nutrition information. Just try it out for free. Text the word DOUBT to 303030. So,
okay, so we paused.
Yes.
This is what I'm going to tell you. He's now defrocked. He had to resign because of sexual harassment allegations, and he had previously had a porn scandal. The former chief judge of the Ninth Circuit, Alex Kaczynski, he has famously said that there isn't anybody walking around. And I'd probably refine it to what you said. I'd refine it to anybody who's in business, who's walking around, who if you sicked the feds on them, that they couldn't find three federal violations a day, because you can't keep up with the tomes of violations of 18 USC, which is the codes where the crimes definition of crimes are. I mean, there are so many crimes. There are so many things that you can unwittingly do, and there's so many ways that they can come after you that if they want you, they can get you, which is one of the reasons why the U.S. Supreme Court, at least, has always ruled that a prosecutor's got to, you know, he's supposed to be the stopgap. And to use his, you know, discretion and to use his reasonableness so that you just don't go after people and, you know, investigate and then indict based on your desire for partisan purposes or to take out a political opponent, which is interesting because also yesterday the governor of, is it Missouri? Yeah. Was indicted for invasion of privacy, and this guy was a rising star, good-looking guy, by the way, with a very good pedigree. I want to say he was Rhodes Scholar, Marine, Purple Heart, if I'm not mistaken. Gary can correct me.
Navy SEAL, but you're Navy on, SEAL. You're on track.
What did he do?
Yeah. So apparently he's having an affair with his hairstylist, who is apparently Asian. And and then the Asian hairstylist is getting a divorce from her husband, and the husband dimes out or finds some way a picture that the governor has apparently taken of his wife, soon-to-be ex-wife, bound and naked in the guy's house. And so that then becomes a, he turns it over. I mean, the story came out about 6 or 8 weeks ago, and there was a rumor the FBI was investigating, but this, he was taken into custody yesterday by the state attorney or the county attorney there. And he was indicted on a felony charge of invasion of privacy. And his lawyer filed the exact same day, which I think was yesterday, a motion to dismiss saying that the invasion of privacy is when you're taking the picture of somebody, like the that case where somebody took some celebrity took a picture of a woman in the locker room and mm-hmm. then posted it, something like that, where there's some expectation of that, but that the argument is that this is not an invasion of privacy because apparently the hairstylist likes to get tied up and into bond, semi-bondage with the governor. But he's not resigned. He's decided to tough it out, at least so far, and is going to fight it.
Let's see if we can quickly cover some ground here. So,
okay.
So here's a question popped in my head. When I said to you, or when you found out 14 months ago or 15 months ago, whatever, Mueller was getting involved with this, when you knew there was going to be a special prosecutor, and you fast forward to today, is it disappointing that there's not more meat on the bone, or has this exceeded your expectations, or are they closer to Trump or further away from Trump than you would have anticipated if you said, we're just going to go down the road a year and we'll land here? You tell me.
This is much faster than I would have anticipated.
Much faster.
It's much faster. It's infinitely faster than a traditional federal investigation. I think I mentioned before, the fastest one I've ever seen is the guy McFarland that on the case where we sued for the Fyre Festival. That was lightning speed. I think start to finish, that was 4 months and they indicted the guy. But this case, and generally white collar cases, you never see this kind of action, this many pleas, and this kind of cooperation in this kind of time period. And literally, the idea that they've got General Flynn cooperating, and now there's a movement to get him to withdraw his plea, and that you've got Gates today flipping. It's much faster than I would have predicted.
How close to Trump are they, if you would have?
If I had to speculate, I'd say the guy who's in immediate danger next is Jared Kushner. I think that on two different bases. I think all of this money laundering stuff and all of the meetings that have been had and all the data analytics all points to him having being the next guy up to bat, so to speak.
What do you think about Uranium One, if anything?
Uranium One is an interesting, you know, I've watched the people who make the case, I've watched the people who debunk the case, and frankly, I think that my feeling is, and I've listened to both sides on this with great attention because I wanted to understand it at first, this would get the attention of a prosecutor. I mean, there's no question that this would get the attention of a prosecutor. The fact that that there seems to be at least a prima facie quid pro quo, and I know that people have poo-pooed that, but I've poo-pooed it as a defense lawyer, and that doesn't mean anything. That's never stopped a prosecutor from pursuing something, and so I think that there is there's something to investigate. I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to end up being end up in an indictment, but the other thing I'll tell you about, and I've been kind of chuckling about these FBI texts. If I'm defending somebody and I see that the agents are texting back and forth saying, you know, this, that, or the other thing, I had a case in Pasadena not long ago where the cop and the victim ended up having an affair, and we discovered the texts right in the middle of right before the trial, and it blew the case up. That's a significant thing. Anybody who tells you that that's not going to be at play, or that it's irrelevant, it's a joke. I mean, that's something that a defense lawyer has the absolute duty to zealously use. So when they say that that there are texts going back and forth, or that there was bias going back and forth. If the defense lawyer didn't raise that, and there was a conviction, they'd file a writ of habeas corpus saying the person was incompetent and had committed malpractice and was ineffective as a matter of law. So anybody who dismisses that is just living in a fantasy world. I understand that politically that may not be palatable to the left, but that's the reality of it. And that's why I said this whole thing has kind of flipped the normal constituencies.
Right. Is there any exposure for Hillary Clinton or Obama with the uranium one thing?
I don't think Obama's got any exposure from what I've seen so far, nothing. But the foundation and some of the stuff that was going on with the foundation, I don't have any insight into that, but clearly there's a grounds to investigate, or at least run it to ground and see what was happening. I mean, the timelines on various things are unusual, to say the least, and there's all kinds of, I mean, you can only imagine if the tables were turned, and that's yes. why I say we're in such a crazy atmosphere where people just get crazed over their particular position, and they don't understand, or they have no memory as to what happened when the tables were reversed, so to speak.
Yeah, the founders of Uranium One, I guess, gave $2.3 million to the Bill Clinton. Foundation. Then Clinton
was
paid $500K for a speech. Of course. But look, all we're doing is getting a little glimpse behind the curtain. It's funny because the word of the day a year ago or 2 years ago was transparency, and now we have it. And it's not exciting on either side of the aisle. The transparency is this is how business takes place and how it's always taken place in Washington. Now we get transparency.
That's what's so ironic about all of this. If this is draining the swamp, everybody's in the middle of the swamp, and it doesn't matter who you are. As soon as you go there, you're in the swamp. It's literally, you get slimed.
I have one more question for you, and I'm going to tease it, but just hearing these latest allegations or latest confirmed stories about the sheriff member at the Florida high school that stood outside of the building that the kids were being shot in for a full 4 minutes before entering the building or never entering the building. And I don't know that this guy was a rent-a-cop. They're calling him a sheriff. So
yeah, they said, I saw that too. Because at first he was a school resource officer or an SRO or whatever they call it. And then apparently he was working under the auspices of the sheriff. So one way or another, whether he was a, you know, I don't know what is
Gary.
Gary
has an answer.
Yeah.
It suggests here that he was a police officer and not a sheriff. And the sheriff is the one throwing a lot of shade at him.
Oh, that's why. I'm wondering why the sheriff was throwing his own under the bus, but not his own police officer. So here's what I'm going to tease for you. I don't know. Obviously, there. If your child was one of the 14 victims, I guess, and then your husband was a gym coach or whatever it is, in terms of liability here, you've already got a nice table set with the FBI not following up on tips or going to this guy's, the cops going to his house 39 times and never arresting him or whatever it is. Now you got a guy who was on duty with a gun standing outside the hall where it was safe and never entering the fray. I will tease this to Gargis. If you have a 14-year-old that perished and you can prove from a timeline standpoint that they were close to the end and not the first person to fall before the security guard could even reach the building that he never entered, what are we talking about here in terms of liability? And I'll tell you guys about the ZipRecruiter. You hiring? Posting your open position to job sites and just waiting for the right people to stumble along, it's never going to work. You got to use ZipRecruiter. It learns what you're looking for. It identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. In fact, 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. Again, try it out for free. Remember,
You could actually hire somebody while you're working out for free just by listening to Reasonable Doubt.
Look at him bringing it all together. That's what Mark does. He reunites. He unites our sponsors right now. Our listeners, ZipRecruiter free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. One more time, ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. So what about liability?
This is interesting because there's so many immunities when it comes to law enforcement when you sue the government. You always have to, you know, people always want to, I must get 10 inquiries a day from around the country where people want to sue somebody or sue the government for doing this, that, or the other thing. And what they don't understand is that you have to survive, at least from the lawyer's standpoint, you have to survive what's called a motion for summary judgment, which is where the government, whether it's a municipality, the state, or the feds, is going to say, hey, judge, even if what they say is true, and these are the uncontested facts, that there's still, the government has certain immunities, and they haven't said that they've been able to get through those immunities. And the immunity basically means that we've cloaked you with kind of Superman status, such that you can't get sued. And so one of the problems you've got is you'd have to get over the FBI would be a tough road to hoe. They've admitted that they missed and didn't connect the dots, but not connecting the dots is going to be that's a gray area as to whether you get through an immunity. The guy not going in to defend is probably closer to surviving. If you can make that a product of poor training or negligent training or something of that ilk, the fact that they suspended him and he immediately resigned helps the case there. The other kind of distasteful part of this is the idea that the local cops were going there repeatedly and not doing anything, but they're going to say that's how they were trained. He wasn't a danger to himself or others, which is usually the definition for taking somebody involuntarily into custody. Because one of the things you can't do, people always want to come to me and say, I want my kid committed. He's, you know, he's doing drugs, or I want my mom declared, you know, incompetent. And I say, unless they're a danger to themselves or others, that's generally not, you're not able to get a 72-hour, let alone a 14-day hold in most jurisdictions.
Yeah.
Unless you can show that there was the old expression, non compos menis, which is the Latin for, you know, basically lights are on but nobody's home. That's when you can get a conservatorship, but usually when somebody's that far gone, you're not worrying about them doing harm, you're just worried about them, you know, wandering out into the street and getting hit or something.
Well,
like
there's no doubt there's going to be lawsuits, right?
Absolutely.
And
you can bet any amount of money you have that there will be lawsuits. There will be lawsuits against the gun manufacturer, which will probably fail. There will be lawsuits against the feds. There will be lawsuits against the state. There will be lawsuits against the local municipality. There'll be lawsuits against the school district. There'll be lawsuits, against every conceivable entity that's involved. My belief is, if I'm going to make a prediction, is at some point the government offers up or coughs up a fund, and they just take it away and say, look, we're going to come to a political solution.
Do they, in a way like what they did with 9/11?
Exactly. I just think this has resonated so much, and it hit such a chord across the country that I think they're going to say, why do we need to go and fight and put these people through all this trauma again, and the parents through all this trauma? Let's just come up with a fund and come up with a fair amount and pay everybody off and deal with it in that fashion. I mean, I think if they were smart, they'd do that with some kind of tie-in to, you know, I don't know, eliminating bump stocks or eliminating people from using the AR or purchasing the AR-15 or reigniting the automatic weapons ban that was in place back in the 90s. And actually still is in place, Adam, in California. It's just not
well,
in other jurisdictions.
You know, it's weird, but from my understanding, automatic weapons are illegal. Semi-automatic weapons are the ones that are not. But everything just gets kind of umbrellaed and covered with the same
stroke.
Yeah, what
you do, though, is if you buy a automatic, they've got what they call a bullet button that you can install on it that makes the automatic semi-automatic, and then that makes it legal, supposedly, if it's installed by the gun seller.
You know, it's weird, not to get too granular here, but if Sonny ever goes nuts and shoots up a school, I actually think semi-automatic is probably a more effective way to do it. A full automatic means you shoot a burst, you're through the clip in a second and a half, and you've got to go reload while somebody may be fixing on you. Like, this notion that, you know, it's morbid here, but what I'm saying is semi-automatic versus full automatic, I really don't know that you could do more damage with full automatic than semi. Semi-automatic is as fast as you can squeeze that trigger, as many rounds as you can get off, and that's not a round a second. It's multiple rounds a second.
Right.
So full automatic means, yes, a big burst, and then you must reload. There's not much science to it. So this idea that we go, well, this guy had a full automatic. No, wait, it's semi-automatic. No, he took his semi and made it full. It's if you have any kind of training at all and you have semi-automatic, you can go to any restaurant, any supermarket, any school, or any farmer's market and take out bushels of people and forget about converting anything to anything. So it's sort of a moot argument in a weird way.
All right,
and morbid.
Yeah.
All right, let's go out on a happier note.
On a happier note?
Namely me, and that's me and Dennis Prager, Phoenix, Grand Canyon University. That'll be this Tuesday. And Thunder Valley Casino, that's Friday. And then I'll be going to the Oscars after that.
My trial just got kicked till next month, so I don't know that I'll be there on the 2nd. You're there on the 2nd at Thunder Valley.
Mark, here's how I'm wired. All I've been thinking about for 2 weeks is you and I and a glass of scotch in a porterhouse sitting in the Thunder Valley Casino Steakhouse. And I kept thinking, but what's going to screw this up? What's going to screw it up?
My freaking co-counsel went and had some issue and we had to continue it.
Well, a promise is a promise, Mark, so you're just going to have to fly yourself out to Sacramento on your own dime to have dinner with me on a Friday night.
I love it.
All right, and you can go to amcroll.com for all the live shows everywhere all the time. And, Mark, what do we do with you?
We've got Casa Tropicana in San Clemente, beautiful San Clemente, and right now it's just gorgeous down there. We've got Prova Pizza in Grand Central Station, soon to open in Times Square. We've got the beautiful Tenney restaurant downtown, Mediterranean Tapas, and we'll see you at any of those places.
So until next time, Adam Kroll for Mark Garriga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.